We were not too worried about the revenue initially or how we're going to have the revenue from day one or anything, but it was more into the product.
Because we both bought into the vision of modernizing the supply chain, modernizing the logistics, actually. And that's where we're like, okay, we will finance this one from our own pocket.
Hello again. From Amaya FM, I'm Chirag, and you're listening to a special summer season of Tales of the Trade, where we're talking to three startups across three industries about the ideas they're bringing to life. It's always amazed me that in countries like the US or the UK, your deliveries can move cross-country in a few hours. But shipping in Dubai traditionally goes through this three-day routine. The guys pick up your documents, for example, on day one. There's consolidation at warehouse on day two. And delivery only happens on day three, even when it's all within the same city. And so when we chanced upon a company looking to shake things up in the logistics industry in the country, we had to get them to talk. So pull up a chair and join our conversation with Atif Rafiq and Jitin Mohanan, co-founders at Kafla, who told us the tale of how two university batchmates are bringing logistics and technology closer together, at last. Now, Atif and Jitin studied together during their undergrad years at the University of Wollongong in Dubai. Atif is the shipping expert, having worked in the industry for over a decade after graduating.
I held a lot of position around in shipping, so that kind of gave me a whole idea because I'm from the industry. So I kind of started my way from the bottom up and, you know, went through a lot of roles and then finally ended up at the director level. But that's where I got like a whole hands-on view of what happens on an operational level, what happens on the senior strategic level, and where I wanted shipping to marry with digital, that's where Jitin came in.
I was into digital media, or I would rather say internet media for the last 10 years, and things were going fine, but it was getting repetitive, and you know the challenges in Dubai market in terms of clients' payments. In between, I tried changing the geography that I was targeting. I tried a US market and stuff, and that's when I figured out, like, You really don't need an office space and you need to be confined into an office space and sit there and work. You could be just anywhere in the world and work. And that had in my mind that I had to look into something else.
So your motivation here was you wanted to be in a place where you could be anywhere and work and not have to be tied to a desk.
I understood that when I was focusing on the other markets based out of Dubai. This could be applied in other industry as well. Yeah. And coming from the digital, being a digital marketer and coming from the internet media side, I know the potential, how much we can scale things.
You remember you were telling me that how technology, when you were in that thing, technology changed. They were doing print media, then everyone went to social, and then they started doing all of that.
Things change pretty fast.
Pretty fast. So you need to adapt.
Otherwise, in 3 to 6 months, you are out of the game if you're not up to date. It was around 2015, Atif came to me and said he's found like a lot of things happening in logistics. There's a lot of inefficiencies. He's like, let's talk over a few things that we could implement it in shipping and logistics and on the digital side and make this thing work.
During this time, 2013 to 2015, a lot of things started happening, actually. That's where 2012, Careem, Uber, all of these technologies started coming into existence.
So the logistics game in Dubai was changing?
It was changing towards the B2C, but it wasn't changing towards the B2B, actually. It was still original, you know, you pick up a phone call, you fax it up, you do things like that. Sometimes it's still true till today.
So one co-founder was looking to bring shipping closer to digital, and the other was looking to bring digital to other industries. And they found their synergy in the idea of building a platform that powers the change they wanted to see. Kafla, literally meaning caravan, something that enables movement of items from one place to another.
That's the first thing you got to do. You build a platform, and then second thing what you want to do is you want to standardize, you want to automate, and then you want to digitalize. These are very core three concepts that you want to adopt on your platform, because if things are still done on a phone call or a fax or all or through emails, then you're not standardizing things, actually. That's where we started approaching, me and Jitin, we started approaching this side of the equation that, you know, like we should make a unified platform. Ours is more specialty towards the first mile and the middle mile, actually, which is bringing in from anywhere across the world into the country that right now, that's UAE. Usually when it's done that way, the first mile or the middle mile, it usually changes a lot of hands, actually. It changes, it goes through a freight forwarder at the origin, it goes through a trucker, it goes through customs, it goes through port, it goes through the shipping line, and then it reaches again the port, the customs at the destination. So how do you unify all of that? How do you simplify all of that? So that was the question we started asking us each other. And then we started looking around at standardizing things. Okay, things that are done in US or in UK, it can be broken down into few steps that is the same across all the world. So that is where we standardize a lot of things, actually. And then when we standardize, we started looking at, okay, how could we do it at its speed? Automate them. That's where we use in the back end. We have used a lot of robotic process automation, and we have used different type of technology to help us.
That's the only way to scale.
Like, you cannot have people again encode them. In the back end, we are some of the providers, the vendors, we are directly linked through electronic data interchange. That's the mode through which you can connect through the back end. And we try to give a seamless experience so that if there is a booking that hits us, our platform, it doesn't go through another loop of encoding it and doing it, which previously happens in a normal traditional manner, that, you know, something comes in, you have to take that information and input that information to another platform. But what if you just connect that platform to this platform? That makes everyone's life easier, and it's a seamless integration.
Yeah, but it's easier said than done.
Especially as we add more countries. Yeah, exactly. There's going to be a lot of challenges, but then that's how
That's what you've taken out. That's the problem you've decided to tackle.
The bigger the problem, the bigger the opportunity. So that is... we're not shying away from the fact that, okay, it's a bigger problem. That's where, you know, a lot of other traditional players, they have taken the route of investing in assets first and then technology. We have taken the other extreme side of the spectrum approach, where we are investing in technology first and then later on going to do that.
And as you bootstrap your way through your idea, realizing you need to start from scratch and put together a platform that will help you build your vision, how do you decide whether this platform should be a capital expense you build in-house, an operational one that you outsource, or option three, where you work out some kind of hybrid model?
Initially, we thought of getting it outsourced, but then it didn't really turn out well because of working with that team. For them, we are just a client. They are not part of our core team.
What we realized is that you need to really breathe and smell your product, and you really need to be really surrounded by it. And that conversation has to be all around you, right? Like, you have to think about it day and night, actually. And what happened with us, with the experience of outsourcing that thing, was we would have sessions where a person would liaison with us, and then an account manager who would understand the needs, then translate it into technical terms.
Sitting and coding.
But again, the results were not what we were expecting, and we didn't really feel it coming the right way.
Because we knew exactly what we wanted.
And we also thought that sometimes we were at fault, that we were not able to communicate that. That's why the product is not turning out to be what it is, actually. But then I think at a point, an epiphany occurred to us, and we're like...
So what was the point? Like, how long did you...
Almost like 8 to 12 months, I would say. 2 to 8 months, we were going around it. We would eat each other's head and actually say, like, okay, like, this is not working. This is not working. Like, why is this? He's like, why is it so simple? And why can't he do that?
And so you decided to pull the plug?
Pull the plug.
On the outsourcing model, and then start looking at...
Get a team together, get a good CTO, and start building a team around it. At that time, we were both in a full-time job. We did not leave our jobs, actually. We were still working. And we thought that, you know, the right moment is when we have an MVP in our hand.
In startup lingo, an MVP is the minimum viable product. That baseline platform with just enough core features that allows you to demo the product to customers or pitch it to investors.
To coordinate and to do that, it was a full-time job. And we're like, nah, like, that's... we can't do that. We need someone in-house, some CTO, and build a team around it.
We were not too worried about the revenue initially or how we're going to have the revenue from day one or anything, but it was more into the product and how to get this product out and ready.
Because we both bought into the vision, actually. We both bought into the vision of modernizing the supply chain, modernizing the logistics, actually. And that's where we're like, okay, we will finance this one from our own pocket.
Now, at a startup, every hire is key. Every person you bring on board has to be on the ball almost right away. And not just jump in, but also pick up on a collective responsibility. So hiring a CTO to build the platform around? Absolutely crucial.
Because we were tight on our budget and finances, those were the questions that we would ask, that if we get someone over here, it would not be on the affordability side of things. Actually, we're like, we need someone who could buy into our vision and actually start having a very frank discussion with us. Okay, this is possible, this is not possible. I personally had to go to Pakistan, and actually we were looking for a low-cost area where we could actually go and hire a good talent.
So how long did it take?
It took us a month going around from places to places for me, actually, in Pakistan. And then we did bump into the right person. And once he came on board, we started our discussion around the product, the platform.
And I know we can't distill this down into one thing, right? But what was the thing that told you that he bought into it compared to, say, somebody else?
I think it's more to do with the overall vision and then the experience that Atif had.
It might sound very silly, actually, but it's one of those things that would really, as you said, instinct. And people who are not interested in the money aspect of things. It's a very holistic and meta talk I'm going to talk about, actually, because when I had a meeting with him, and I had a lot of meeting with a lot of people, around 98% of the time, I would be the one paying for the coffee or that meeting or that lunch that I had invited the other person. This was the only one person who actually paid for himself. You know, you offered to pay for me, but I said, no, it's fine, actually. We'll pay, we'll go Dutch. But that's where you kind of like get a feel of things, actually.
As much as he did the nice thing, it's right. Not like the other 99% did something wrong.
Exactly.
It is the expectation that, hey, you called me in for this meeting.
Exactly.
You want to hire me, therefore, okay, coffee's on you, right?
Exactly. As I said, it's a very meta, and it's a very meta thinking, because it's kind of like, I can't explain you probably in words, but that is one of the clue that you know, that left a mark on me, actually.
So how big is this team now?
This is around like 10 people, actually, at the moment.
And they're all based here?
Some of them, they are based here. Some of them, they're based in Pakistan, actually. So we have a remote team, and some of them in India as well, actually. So we try to now remotely manage things, because now we have one good person who could actually now oversee the whole thing. And part of this is, again, comes back to the Jitin's idea that technology adopted. You could be anywhere in the world and you could get the same amount of productivity.
I mean, if we had the whole team here, we would have definitely gone for looking for an investor.
Investors,
by now.
From the day one, actually.
One of the main things that we didn't want to do looking for an investor initially is, if we don't finish our product and be ready with everything, I mean, the product is never finished. Yeah. It's always the updates and things that's going to happen. But even then, if you start from looking for an investor from day one, our focus will be shifted away from the product and rather how to raise investment. I mean, what we had in our mind was to have this go on for 2 years.
So you guys budgeted yourself for 2 years?
We did.
By then, we'll have a decent revenue number and as well as the number of clients that will be on board. And that itself will be something interesting for the investors.
Being a lean and a bootstrap model does help you in two things. You don't have a lot of pressure on your head from an investor, and it actually, because you're doing it on your own pace. Also, it kind of, what it does is actually it does, because you can really look at improving the product, actually. You don't have a lot of pressure on your back, actually, to just get it done, actually.
When we come back, from product to customers and co-founder chemistry. Stay with us. Support for the show comes from Declutter Me, a branded podcast in partnership with MIA FM, talking about organizing and decluttering your life with your host, Shalina Jokir.
Hi, Chirag.
So what's been your favorite episode?
My favorite episode has to be the Swedish death cleaning episode.
Yeah, not a lot of people may know what Swedish death cleaning is, though.
No, they won't, and they'll have to listen to the podcast to find out more. But yeah, interesting topic and very relevant for families and friends.
You can listen to Declutter Me in your favorite podcast player. You can listen to it in the same one you're listening to this ad right now, as well as in streaming apps like Spotify and Angami. For more information, visit declutterme.com/podcast.
Feel like your favorite platforms have become a place for toxicity and fake lifestyles? We invite you to listen to CSR of One, a podcast that explores the proactive side of social media. In a world full of selfies, we challenge you to do more. Do something. Help someone. Use your place in the world for those who don't have a voice. The first season of CSR of One is now live wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. I'm Chirag, and you're listening to Tales of the Trade with Kafila. As we go through a typical startup lifecycle, you reach the stage that makes or breaks you. Finding the customers that believe in your vision for them. So you gather up the minimum viable product we talked about and walk in to demo what you've built. For Atif and Jitin, that first demo came with some hard lessons.
We had a vision of going in and doing a presentation and giving them a demo and getting them excited. And they would be like, hey, here's, take everything. But that didn't happen, actually. And this was someone within our circle, the friend or families and stuff, something like that.
So you were like, we're going to come and we're going to revolutionize your logistics, man. Exactly. Like, come on, let's do this. Yeah.
Exactly. We were too hyped up. We were pumped up about that. And we fell straight to our face, actually. We're like, okay, you know what? I think we might have to go back to the table and find certain details about it, actually.
When you say, like, you fell flat, like, you just mean because, that, like, it didn't work? The presentation didn't work? The story didn't work?
The story did not work. And I'll tell you why it did not work, actually. Because we were not tackling it from their pain point. We were just excited about our technology and what we can do. It was never about them, like, okay, your problem, your issues, your thing. And that's where that conversation really needs to shift. That, you know, it's not about your technology, it's not about you, it's not about, you know, how excited you are about your tech and all that. You have to understand the problem, the pain point, and go tackle that.
How we fit into their
how we fit into, and we get that problem can be solved with this technology and it can give them a value. So that was the first demo we did. It didn't work. So our first customer, it came through an online digital campaign we did, actually, Google. There was a pain. We understood the pain. We had the right messaging for that pain so that as soon as he searched for something, he immediately saw us.
This is one of the things that, sure, it's there elsewhere in the world, but I see it very prevalent here. You'd be like, give me the names of three other clients you have so I can call them. I mean, then nobody calls anybody, by the way, but I need references.
Yeah, I don't think we have had this problem so far, at least.
At the end, when we changed our message and we started tackling it from their point of view, we would at the end, through all our meetings, we would get a wow at the end with our technology.
I mean, it wasn't like they were like, okay, look, this all sounds great, but I mean, how do I rely on this?
I think it should be the other way around for us. Like, we should be careful about the clients that we onboard.
Because what happens is that in this industry, it's a very traditional and very downright manual industry. When a jump like this happens, right? Yeah, these type of questions were not the one. The questions were mostly at the end was like, what else it can do?
So a business would come to you to say, I want to. I need logistics.
I need to ship something by sea, anywhere in the world from UAE.
Or import anything from China or Europe.
Then what we would do is actually we would set them up in our system. We would give them access to the platform. And we would give them the ability to have tools that would be self-serve. So let's say if you want to ship anything from here to Belarus or Europe or let's say London. So you would actually look up rates for your requirement. That could be your goods in any of those standardized containers. And then you would just hit the button to look up rates. And then immediately you'll get a couple of options of the rates. And then you have the ability now to book it directly over there. The previous experience of only this step would actually take if not some hours, but some days actually, because you would send out an email and then you would send out another email to remind that there was an email on that email. And then you would probably call up and then say that, hey, I've sent you an email. Have you received the email? And then it would...
They'll check
the
availability.
They will check and then come back to you. Like, that's how it that experience is.
Just like how you book an airline ticket on kayak.com. Or
you could look up prices immediately, instantaneously, for around like 5,000 combination of service and vessels and cutoffs that you could manage. And then from there, you could actually book it. You could then immediately schedule your trucking side of things.
Yeah, even the shipping instruction, all the documentation in terms of bill of lading, invoices.
So right off the bat, you have the ability to do end-to-end. You could book everything in that start moment itself, actually.
What has been your biggest challenge, your biggest pain so far?
Inertia.
In the industry?
In the industry. People are used to doing things in a certain way. So why fix things that are not broken?
They need to change the processes probably. I mean, for a smaller company, it would be pretty easy to get online with a dashboard. But let's look at a bigger organization. They need to have the team trained on this and get them start using this.
There's a lot of education that goes in play, because you need to educate them. You need to make them aware, A, that there is a solution available, a faster solution. A lot of conversation, we're trying to push the idea or to help our customers understand the fact that platform and all this thing is just a stage one. Think about the fact that you are putting your data in structure in this centralized place where you could actually now get some insight pushed into to you for you to view and to get done with something. So that is where, you know, they don't understand the value of that. You know, I guess it's a far-fetched idea for them yet. To get the right eyes and attention, to give them the grand vision of how you could digitalize your logistics department, how you could simplify things.
When I talk to entrepreneurs and startups, I often explore how they go about their responsibilities. We spoke a little bit about this on our last episode with Crank and their four co-founders. And it's also something that came up during our live episode a few weeks ago with the Queen of Hard Talk, Dawn Metcalf.
In the last year, we've probably had half a dozen different co-founders get in touch to talk about precisely this. Is we started this thing together. I thought we shared a vision. Oh, we don't. it's become really, really clear. And how do we have that conversation? No, it happens a lot. And again, way too often, it happens too late.
It's always good to have a good chemistry. We do understand each other, and a little bit of background actually does help. We have known each other for a long time, so that helps actually.
More than 13, 14 years.
Right? Yeah.
But I mean, so he likes working with you, but you?
I do enjoy the company and working together as a team, and it's been great.
We did have that conversation, a conscious conversation, where we decided on the finances, we decided on the capital investment that happened in the start. That, okay, how much are we going to put in? How much are we going to, and who's going to take care of what? That's a good thing about knowing each other, that conversation can go kind of freely and casually. Our distinction is very clear to us that he looks after the marketing, the digital, the whole side, the tech side. I look after the business operations.
Right. Of course, there would be points where we're like, I have a completely different idea to what you're doing. Like, why would you do it this way? Like, this way is so much better.
There were a lot of those things, actually, like in terms of branding.
Yeah.
In terms of branding, the color choice and all that thing. I evidently remember our, like headbutting each other and be like, okay, you know, like this is the, you know, because Jitin likes things a certain way and has to be done certain way as well. I would push in new things, and that's where he would push back at me and be like, no, not yet. That's not the brand guideline. That's not this is.
So what I tell him is, let's just stick on to what we have decided so far, and we'll revise the brand guideline in like 6 months or 1 year.
That's the branding way of saying, we're not dealing with this problem right now.
Right now.
And I'm hoping you'll forget in 6 months.
Exactly. That's a standard answer that I get actually for
But I do the... I do accommodate his suggestions as well. Wherever we can accommodate, I do that.
I consider us as one. I don't consider us as two people. Yes, we do have distinctions. But at the same time, when we are going to scale up, when we are going to have a lot of people, we should be on the same page constantly. Like, if he's doing certain things, I should be aware of that. If I'm doing certain things, he should be aware of that.
Now, you may be surprised to hear how often this happens. But as we go about learning about the companies, the communities, the entrepreneurs, and the co-founders, sometimes they learn a little bit about each other as well. In Kafala's case, turns out both co-founders enjoy their downtime on the road.
But I don't listen to anything, actually. I just go in a silent mode.
I didn't know that you do that.
I do that.
I do that.
Yeah.
So that's when I get like peace of mind.
Peace of mind. No, like, distraction. It's just no distraction. Just like my mind is clear. Like I'm, because, you know, this is where your moments happen, actually, because when your voluntary mind is focused on something, involuntary mind is actually around all the way, usually just like drive in and just like zero noise.
Out of curiosity, is that something that changed, like, after becoming an entrepreneur? It was always like that for you?
No, it actually changed after I became a father, actually, I think. Because it's like when you are a father, right? Like, there's so much noise around it, like, just tune out, actually. You just want to, like...
Oh, my God. So basically, drive time is me time.
Drive is me time, exactly. I don't know, is that... You do that? Yeah. Yeah, okay.
So it started off with a fault in my radio player. And then... And then I started loving it. it was really nice.
Yeah, but it is. It's a fact, actually. Burnout is a real thing. It you know, like, there are times where just like, you know, you're just thinking to yourself, like, okay, wow, like, what is happening? But you're right, actually. Like, that's where you need to maybe do something else, distract your mind, do something else.
And of course, no startup can be without that eye on the horizon. That vision to take the future by storm.
In terms of the product, there are a lot of development that's still going on because the product is still not completed. We are only done with a small part of the overall product or services that we'll be offering. So that's still in the pipeline. I mean, there are technologies out there like fintech companies who are also starting up who can solve these kind of things. So yeah. We're talking to them and see how we can incorporate all these things. So wherever possible, we automate things. So this development will keep going at least for quite some time.
It will keep on going. There's a lot of good ideas and development that we have in the pipeline. There's IoT, Internet of Things. There is blockchain, which we have experimented it. But
and with regards to the product, I would say right now the sea part is taken care. Now the next one will be the land and air transport. So that itself is a big product by itself.
We want to inspire certain actions that can, you know, people can look at it and be like, okay, that can be done better, actually. That can be done faster, actually. And that could be in a way collaborating with these guys to have that knowledge share across the industry that, yes, we do want to have that conversation with the customs. We do want to have that conversation with the ports. We do want to have that conversation with the shipping lines. How can we deliver this better and faster?
And moving forward, we will need to talk to other warehouse providers and third-party vendors because our clients are requesting to have a warehouse, a storage. So we'll definitely be collaborating with other vendors in the market and try to bring them up to speed and get them on board.
It's the age of collaboration. It's not the age of competition.
In a $6 trillion industry, in a country at the forefront of infrastructure and tech in our region, Kafala is now well poised to provide a new foundation for logistics. You've been listening to Tales of the Trade from Amaya FM with me, Chirag Desai. Our producer is Gaia, and our intern is Abhishek Venkatasubramanian. Original music for this show was composed by Reiner Erlings. As we wrap up our special summer season, we bring you a bonanza episode with not one, but two startups, closely entwined in their operations and killing it in the art scene.
It was a lot of tasting. It was a lot of good food and a lot of, you know, failed experiments and, you know, chai along the way.
I mean, if you look at it from a broader, like, long-term perspective, who would ever think that combination would ever work?
We'll see you next week.